First today, internet gaming. Most of us would consider it a fairly benign pastime. Many would also acknowledge that they or their kids spend too much time in front of a screen playing games instead of perhaps pursuing healthier activities. But it seems there's a more serious side to getting hooked on internet gaming. A new disorder may be emerging, known as internet gaming disorder. It's thought this disorder affects the way we interact with others socially, and it does contribute to bringing about anxiety, depression, and overall poorer mental health. Dr. Daniel Lowton from the University of Melbourne is the co-author of a new report on internet gaming addiction, and he joins us from Melbourne. Daniel, welcome to Counterpoint.
Thanks, Amanda.
Well, look, is it correct that every time someone gets something going wrong in their life, they're addicted to gaming or, you know, they murdered someone, they say, well, it's not really me. I've got a psychological problem. If you all fix me, I'll be okay. Is that what gaming disorder is? Just a way of saying, I've messed up. Can we blame it on some psychiatric disorder?
Some psychiatric disorder is a little bit broad. If you said, can we blame it on addiction, then I certainly would agree that there are some implications in the study of internet gaming disorder that suggest a broadening of the concept of addiction. And so it does seem to be that addiction is getting bigger. And theoretically, the way in which researchers have studied addiction to, say, the internet or to video games definitely seems to lay a pathway to be able to apply addiction to any activity.
Including playing Candy Crush, for example.
Yes. In fact, most of the video game addiction scales, for example, don't distinguish between the exact game that's played. A lot of researchers ask about that and study the relationships, but the diagnostic criteria for internet gaming disorder, it's not game specific. It can be any game. At the moment, it specifies the game should be on the internet, but theoretically, there's no reason why a person could be addicted to a game that's not on the internet.
What are the signs that someone's, you know, fallen down the murky path and got themselves hooked?
Okay, well, at this stage, the American Psychiatric Association have settled on some very early preliminary diagnostic criteria for what they're calling internet gaming disorder, which is the official term for what people have previously called, say, video game addiction. And there are lots of different synonyms for addiction that studies have used, like intemperate, overuse, excessive. And all of those relate to essentially the same concept of being addicted to video games. However, the official diagnosis now is being termed internet gaming disorder. And it is based on essentially six components of addiction that have been taken from studies of substance abuse and pathological gambling. And those have effectively been applied across to video game playing. And researchers then study whether video game playing can actually meet the criteria for those components of addiction. And so what they are is salience. So in the word salience is basically preoccupation with a particular activity. It could be a drug. As we're talking about video game playing, it's an activity. And what that really means is that the prioritization of that activity in your life has moved up the hierarchy of the things that you enjoy and the things that you do, to the point that it's actually very high on your list of priorities. And essentially that manifests in a preoccupation with video games. And often those thoughts can be intrusive. So unwanted thoughts about playing video games and a sense of a need to play. And that basically, researchers have called that a motivational monopoly in the past, as the things that motivate you, that drive you, come to be connected too much to just one activity. There's withdrawal, and withdrawal relates to if that activity is reduced or taken away, then the person feels irritable, restless, anxious, or sad. There's tolerance, and tolerance relates to the need to do that activity more and more to get the same level of buzz. There's a loss of control, so people actually attempt to reduce their game playing time or to quit, and they're unable to do so. And there's continued use despite psychosocial problems. There's deception, so they may have deceived family members or therapists or close others about the amount of gaming. There's mood modification, which is essentially the use of video games to escape or relieve a negative mood, such as feelings of helplessness or guilt. And there's also conflict, in the sense that that can also mean conflict with other responsibilities in life, as well as interpersonal conflict with other people. So that means they've often jeopardized or lost a significant relationship, job, educational or career opportunity because of how much they're playing video games.
Well, I get the picture. I'm sure we all get the picture of what it means. And I think I have an unhealthy relationship with my phone and my iPad on the basis of what you've said. So I'm going to have to think about that very carefully. Now, that leads me to the next question. What age are gamers largely?
Well, gaming, it's interesting. The game general gamer demographics is actually moving up and up. So there's more and more older gamers are playing. And we think this is because there's a real cohort of the population that were around when video game playing became popular and became mainstream. And so as a result of that, we're seeing the average age of gamers move up and up. At the moment, the average age of the gamer in Australia is 33 years old. Most of the studies predominantly focus on young adults, but even also adolescents. There is probably a little bit of too limited a number of studies on adults who play video games, and particularly older adults. But there are some really interesting studies that are not pathologically focused on why older adults play video games. And older adults actually do have unique motivations to play video games, and it includes a way of staying connected with children and grandchildren, a way of staying connected with people outside of the home, particularly because
avoiding Alzheimer's.
Yes, I mean, exercising cognitive skills is definitely one of the reasons, and nursing homes have actually trialed interventions now where residents are asked to play video games, and they have predicted lower incidence of falls. So there is some evidence to suggest that those sorts of really positive video gaming interventions can make a difference.
Well, we tend to think of these things as being bad. Certainly an addiction does, to me, imply you've got a loss of control and you've got to look at that, but
certainly.
In addition to the people who play games for the reasons you mentioned, there can be some sort of interactivity with other people, even though you don't see them.
Certainly.
I know there's a game a lot of people play called Words with Friends, and these video games, apparently you can almost play in teams with other people and get a form of interaction with others.
Yes, certainly. And that level of connectedness that video games provides now is actually, I think, really important. And it can be one of the great benefits of video game playing. And certainly studies that have looked at moderate video game playing, sort of what you might consider to be more the normal type of video game playing that's balanced with your life, and that connectedness with other people is really important, not just to older adults, but to younger people as well. People in rural and regional areas actually are able to use video games as a way of keeping in touch with friends. Many of the collaborative video games that you play online together allow you to speak with each other. So it's a way of catching up with friends. You can chat with them and find out what's going on in their lives while you're playing video games.
You do hear some employers talking about the problem with emails and with iPhones, incidentally, that people sit at work and they're looking at YouTube or whatever. I mean, are there people, is this any other economic costs?
There are some fairly large-scale studies on the diminished work productivity as a result of inappropriate internet usage. It's not an area that I've looked at very closely. What I've looked at more in the studies of video game addiction are people who actually lose their jobs. So it becomes so difficult for them to function. They choose to stay home and play video games, for example, instead of going to work. So to the point where the video games comes to dominate their life so much that they actually start getting into trouble at work, so they start arriving late, they may receive warnings, and then eventually they may even lose their job. And that's when something is more on the addictive, more pathological end of the scale. I think what you were talking about there is probably a little bit further down the normal range.
I think employers are getting sick of it being regarded, however, as normal for you to take, you know, another 10 minutes out of your day, because that's 50 minutes. It's not far off an hour of your working week. You know, if it's 10 minutes a day, if it's 5 minutes in the morning and 5 minutes at night, that's how it adds up. Now, just on the cost of these things, many of these games have various levels at which you might have to pay more to get extra opportunities.
Yes.
A more complex game or a bit longer to solve a puzzle or something.
That's correct.
It might not seem much per person, but worldwide that's a lot of money in that, isn't there?
Certainly is. The industry is growing economically, and it is a new sort of economic mode in the industry at the moment. Previously, video games were essentially a one-off purchase, and that provided you with complete access to the game, even the online component. And then gradually over the past 5 or 10 years, we've seen a bit of a shift and an introduction of new economic modes where video games may be either free or very cheap to purchase initially, but then they require upkeep costs in order to continue to play online or to open and access other features of the game. And so that is a different economic model. Whether it ends up costing gamers, say, more than what it used to, games were relatively expensive back then for the initial purchase, like $80 to $100 in Australia, for example, was pretty common. However, in more recent games, whether you end up spending more in what are called microtransactions, you purchase one little add-on to your character in the game and another little add-on here, and you might purchase a little house for them to live in the virtual world. And all of that can add up. Whether it actually is costing gamers more, I'm not 100% sure. I think sometimes it is, although there also are some benefits from the collective online upkeep of the gaming networks. Like, for example, the PlayStation Network actually gives people a free game every month to download as part of their yearly subscription. But you do have to pay a yearly subscription now of about $100.
Is it true that there are live-in centres to which you can be dispatched in order to rid yourself of this problem? Is that true that in China and other countries, and even in Australia, there are, in effect, institutions to assist you with this?
There are institutions that can assist. I would say in Australia that the primary method of assistance would be through the fairly standard mental health system that we have here. Mm. And those treatment centres are much rarer and they're not very well publicised in terms of what they're actually doing and how effective their approaches are. However, in China, there is a little bit of research behind some of those centres and they are live-in. And there is actually a documentary film about that. But beyond that, I wasn't able to get a lot of scientific information about exactly what they're doing and how they go about it. There's not a lot in the scientific literature.
You did describe these live-in centres in China as controversial.
Yes.
What's controversial about them? A bit harsh, the treatment?
I would say their treatment approaches are controversial in a sense that they actually hook people up to EEG machines and then try to do what they call retraining their brain. They believe that certain areas of the brain have become underdeveloped because they weren't exercised enough after prolonged video game addiction. And so, once again, it's hard for me to comment because I haven't been to them. I don't know what they're doing exactly. And we tend to go by the scientific evidence, and there's not a lot in the scientific literature about the effectiveness and the treatment approaches that are being taken in those live-in treatment centres in China.
Mm, at least you know there are live-in treatment centres in China, which is something of which I was not aware.
It was surprising to me as well.
Yeah. I've enjoyed talking to you about this. I am worried about my own addiction to Candy Crush, that's certain, and Solitaire. You've made me rethink I might be heading down a slippery path. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Amanda. It was a pleasure to meet you.